Good morning. Good to have everyone here today. And if you're visiting with us, thank you for being here with us. One of the Ten Commandments is thou shalt not covet. That's what we're going to be talking about this morning. And I want to begin with an example of a fellow who is not covetous. You probably heard about him. I heard about it in passing, but it just in passing, and then looked it up and was really impressed by this. September 14th, last month, up in Boston, actually it was near, not that far from where Tim and April live, James Glenn, the fellow that you see pictured here, and some of you probably saw this in the news, was near a mall and he found a backpack. In the backpack was $2,400 in cash and $39,000 worth of traveler's checks, along with a Chinese passport. Mr. Glenn waved down a couple of police officers and said, I found this. It's got identification in it. It's got a bunch of money in it. And he gave it to them. They notified the mall, and the owner had reported missing, and they were able to get it back to him. When they asked Mr. Glenn for, you know, some information on him, he gave them his name and the homeless shelter that he stays at. He said later, he gave a handwritten statement because he has a very bad stuttering problem, so he doesn't like to speak in public. But he handed out a news conference because the police, they called a news conference, and they just wanted to thank him, and they gave him a certificate of appreciation and called him up. They didn't make him speak, but they just commended him for his honesty. And in a handwritten statement, he handed out a news conference. James said he's glad the bag and its contents were returned to the rightful owner. See, he said he would not have kept even one penny from the bag, no matter how desperate he was for money. Well, in addition to the police honor, James is receiving generous donations from strangers who want to help him. Among them are two kids from Bedford who are giving up money they've saved up for toys. They'd earned about $200 from doing chores around their house, and they're giving that all to Mr. James. And another fellow put up a website, GoFundMe.com. Ethan Withington put this up. He heard James' story, set up the page, and the initial goal was to get him $50,000. Now, at the time of this article, which was just a couple, by Wednesday morning, the page had received more than $66,000 in donations, just in a very short time. Then it hit $100,000, and if you want to go to it and help him out, this is the website for it. It's GoFundMe, Boston Homeless Man Reward. Ethan Withington, who the newspaper cite is the fellow who's doing the website for him, and Mr. Withington is not keeping any money. It all goes to James Glenn. So far, as of last night, he's been given $158,614. So, this is an example of Wednesday night. We talked about this verse. You remember? Luke 6:38, for those of you that were in the class. Give, and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. If you've ever bought something in bulk and they just kind of gave you a small quantity, there's something that just really, you know. But when you remember the old idea of the baker's dozen was what? 13, you know, that he'd put that extra donut in there for you. This shaken together, running over will be put into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And so I'd recommend going to that website and helping that fellow out. One of the beautiful things, you don't do good because that's what's going to happen. He didn't know this was going to happen. He knew that wasn't his money. He knew it was somebody else's. And by the way, one thing that this made me think of, and I think I needed some correction on it. He's a homeless fellow. Now, he was employed until 2005, but then he lost his job, and he's living in a homeless shelter. He's a panhandler, because he gave the mayor, who's, I think, running for mayor again, he gave him a plug because he said, the mayor put $7 in my panhandling cup. You know, vote for him. But that tells you something. I have a tendency sometimes to think that some of the people that are out there, and some of them are likely to be, you know, alcoholics or there's. I've dealt with so many people who have called me asking for money, and I find almost very, very often that they're just liars because their sob story, it doesn't match up. And, you know, I'll ask a few questions, and very quickly it's, you know, I moved here to take care of my aunt, and she just died. Well, what's your name? I don't know. You know, or what's your address? 47284. Yeah, it's. But this is a reminder, not everybody that's down and out is an alcoholic and a dishonest person and a bum. This man picked up something with over $40,000 worth of cash and traveler's checks in it and promptly waved down the police and gave it to him. That's not a covetous man. Exodus chapter 20, verse 17. Let's go to the text and read it. After you shall not murder, after you shall not commit adultery, after you shall not steal, after you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. It says, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male servant, or his female servant, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that is your neighbor's. If it's not yours, don't covet it. This made the Ten Commandments. And it's also in Jeremiah chapter 6. Go over to Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 6, verse 13. From the least to the greatest of them, everyone is greedy for unjust gain. From the prophet to the priest, everyone deals falsely. And that reminds me also of 2 Peter 2, where it talks about the false teachers who, in covetousness, pretend to be something that they're not. And you've seen some TV evangelists out there probably that are like that or heard of them in the past, and they've done some reporting on some of them and found out some of really kind of scams that they're running out of covetousness. But look at this in Jeremiah chapter 8, verse 10. They've been covetous, and now look what's going to happen. Verse 10, therefore I will give their wives to others, their fields to conquerors, because from the least to the greatest, everyone is greedy for unjust gain. From the prophet to the priest, everyone deals falsely. So Judah is going to fall. And after all this covetousness, this, you know, wanting from other people and taking from other people, he says, you know what's going to happen to you? The Babylonians are going to come. Somebody else is going to take your wife. Somebody else is going to take your field. Somebody else is going to take your stuff. In Micah chapter 2, it talks about through violence and taking fields. And of course, we'll be speaking of that in particular, a good example of that in just a moment with Ahab. In Romans chapter 1, verse 29, where it lists the sins of the Gentiles, and among them, of course, is covetousness. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10 and 6:10, do you remember when the church there needed to deal with a man who had his father's wife? It said, I wrote to you. In fact, let's turn over and look at that text. 1 Corinthians chapter 5. One of the people has his father's wife, and he says, you need to deliver that person to Satan for the destruction of the flesh, so that that person will be saved, so they'll see their sin and repent from it. Verse 6, your glorying is not good. Don't you know that a little leaven leavens a whole lump? Purge out the old leaven that you may be new. Verse 9, I wrote to you in my epistle, have no company with fornicators. Not at all meaning fornicators of the world, or with covetous or extortioners or idolaters. Then you'd have to go out of the world. But as it is, I wrote unto you not to keep company if any man that is named a brother be a fornicator or covetous or an idolater or a reviler or a drunkard or an extortioner, with such a one, no, not to eat. Of course, in 2 Thessalonians, it just goes on to say if they walk disorderly. But covetousness is one of the things singled out here. Now, sometimes you might think, well, you can't see covetousness. It's like, I think that fellow's covetous. Well, we're not to judge according to appearance, but sometimes it becomes clear that there's covetous, and the church was not to tolerate it. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 10, don't be deceived. The unrighteous will not enter into the kingdom of heaven, including the covetous. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 3 and 5, it warns against covetousness. And then look at this in Colossians 3, 5. It says, put to death your members on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desires, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Do you remember the rich young ruler? Jesus, looking at him, loved him and said, there is one thing you lack. What was it? He loved money more than serving the Lord. And Jesus required him to give up that money. And what did he do? He walked away sorrowfully. So he had the opportunity to serve the Lord or to keep his money. And which one did he choose? So which one did he make his Lord? Covetousness is idolatry. There's some other things that are, some other sins that are connected with this. There's greed, that, like, we'll be talking in a minute about Achan. Just that you look at it there in Joshua chapter 7, and what was it? Jericho had been taken, and they were forbidden from taking the gold in the spoils, that was to go to the temple. But Achan said what? I saw 50 shekels of gold, 200 shekels of silver. And then there were these fine, expensive garments. So what did he do? He took them and buried them under his tent, which may have well been with the knowledge of the rest of the family in the tent that was being done. You can see why somebody would do that. You can just see the greed there. I mean, it's right there for the taking. He disobeyed God. It wasn't his. It wasn't to be his. The greed. Then there's jealousy and envy. And one of Aesop's fables tells about a dog that has a piece of meat. And he's going along with his piece of meat, and he has to cross over a stream. And as he's going over the little bridge, he looks down in the water, and he sees his reflection. And in the reflection, he sees a dog with a piece of meat. And so he decides, he doesn't just want his piece of meat, he wants that dog's piece of meat too. So, of course, he opens his mouth. And, of course, he loses his piece of meat and he ends up with nothing. Jealousy and envy and greed are horrible things. And then there's self-pity. We're going to read about Ahab in just a minute. just the self-pity. Have you ever, and remember the things that said, do not covet your neighbor's donkey, you don't covet his money, don't covet his wife. People can sit there sometimes and look at, somebody might covet somebody else's health, or somebody else's neighborhood, or somebody else's car, or somebody else's wife, or somebody else's whatever, or children, whatever. And just, the Bible says, don't. Thou shalt not covet. It's not just thou shalt not take. That was another commandment. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not commit adultery. But back before you get to the stealing or the adultery, this is wrong. Thou shalt not covet. One of the things that contributes to that is self-pity. If we feel sorry for ourselves that we don't have something that somebody else has, why should they get to have that much money when I don't? Why should they get, and you know, it can feel unjust. And sometimes, you know, the money goes back to a person that might not have been that good of a person. There was a case in Chicago some years ago where a fella, I think it was a cab driver, $15,000 or so got left in his cab, and he returned it to the people. And they were so glad because they were on their honeymoon, and that was money people gave them at the wedding, and they were on the way to Las Vegas to gamble. You know? but he still did the right thing. You know, he gave it back. But it can seem unjust. Why do the wicked prosper? Why don't I have what somebody else has? Why does this person have something I don't have? Well, that's part of life. It just is. Some things have been worked for and worked for and worked for. Some things are natural gifts. Some things are circumstances, time and chance. Happens to all. But we need to appreciate what we've got. Gratitude is an important thing. And the more people are grateful and content for what they have, they're not going to be bothered with jealousy and envy and covetousness over what other people have. Now you think about that song, Count Your Many Blessings. When upon life's billows you are tempest-tossed, when you are discouraged, thinking all is lost, count your many blessings, name them one by one, and it will surprise you what the Lord has done. Any one of us can sit down and think about something we don't have that we could wish we had. Any one of us can do that. And if you want, you can make yourself miserable. And then you can start resenting the people that have that. And you can start being jealous and envious, and you can be wrapped up in covetousness. Every one of us has things that other people would be thrilled if they had. I've got six children, and they are not the same. Some things are in common to several of them. But there's other things about each of them that are unique. And some of them have skills that the other ones don't. Some of them have opportunities that the other one don't and such. But I don't want six of just one of them. You know, I'm glad that Luke is Luke. I'm glad that Zach is Zach. I'm glad that TJ is TJ, Brian, etc. And if they all just exactly the same thing and had all the same skills and everything else, that's to make sure that everybody's got the same. What, do you want to live in a world where everybody has exactly what you've got and nobody's got anything more? Communism tries to kind of do that on an economic scale. It's an ugly system. I lived over there right after the Berlin Wall came down. We moved to East Europe. And the two things that I noticed about Czech character, there were some noble things about Czech character, but two things that stood out negatively about just their personalities that was too easy was they were suspicious and they were jealous. Those were not everybody, but those were things that were easy to be part of them because they just spent 40 years under communism. And so you're suspicious. You don't know who's all secret police. And the other thing is, you're jealous. Like one Czech told me, he said, we're trained to be jealous of anybody who has something we don't. I had a chance one time to speak at Charles University, oldest, just an English class was all, but it's the oldest university, I think, in Europe. And I just talked to them about, at the time, Sam Walton still ran Walmart. And I was just explaining, I said, I know that when I go to his store, I've made him just a little bit richer. I said, and I don't care. You know, he gives me a product that, and I liked Walmart more when Sam Walton ran it, but that's irrelevant. But he says he gives me a product that I need at a good price. And so I don't resent that he got a little bit more money out of me. That's fine. This resentment thing, it's just an ugly and pointless thing. Yeah, I've told you before, my favorite joke from over there was the one that they told on the Russians where communism had been around for 7 years. And it went like this. The genie offered the Frenchman, the Englishman, and the Russian a wish. And the Englishman asked for the country manor. The Frenchman asked for the chateau with a vineyard. And then he said to the Russian, what do you want? And the Russian goes, my neighbor has a goat and I don't. Kill the goat. And that's unfortunately, that's an attitude that people can have. But you remember in 1 Corinthians 12, it talks about the body and members of the body in the church. Don't think because I'm not the eye, I'm not part of the body. If the whole body were eyeballs, where would the hearing be? If everything was the hand, where would the feet be? Appreciate that there are different people. Appreciate that different people have different things. And instead of us sitting around resenting what we don't have, we would be much better served being thankful for what we do have. And nothing makes you appreciate what you do have more than losing it. Most of you have eyesight. If tomorrow you go blind, guess what you will suddenly appreciate more than you do today? Eyesight. Most of you are mobile. If tomorrow you lose your mobility, guess what you will appreciate more than you do today? All of us can breathe. If tomorrow you lose your ability to breathe, guess what? For a few seconds or minutes, you will appreciate more than you do today. Covetousness in action. We're not going to take time to read all these. We're not going to turn to Achan because it's already been discussed. But there's Achan and the greed and the covetousness. There's Ahab. Look at 1 Kings chapter 21. First Kings chapter 21, Naboth's vineyard. Now Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard in Jezreel beside the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. After Ahab said to Naboth, give me your vineyard that I may have it for a vegetable garden because it's near my house and I'll give you a better vineyard for it. Or if it seems you, I'll give you its value in money. Naboth said to Ahab, the Lord forbid that I should give you the inheritance of my fathers. Land was an important thing in keeping it in the family and such. Ahab went, this is the king. This is not a homeless man who doesn't have much. Let me tell you something. One of the problems with covetousness is that people think that your worth is determined by how much you're worth. That is not so. Reading about James Glenn, one commentator down at the bottom, you know how people can comment on the news, one person criticized him for not keeping the money. And he said, when opportunity happened, he talked about years ago, he said he happened to manage to get a hold of a bunch of cocaine, and he said, now I live in a beach house in Mexico. Well, whoop-de-doo for you. You know, it's, there are people that have money that are worthless human beings. Your worth as a person is not your worth on a spreadsheet. Here's Ahab. Ahab went into the house sullen because of what Naboth the Jezreelite had said to him. For he said, I will not give you the... He laid down on his bed and turned away his face and would eat no food. You see the self-pity? Jezebel's wife came to him and said, why is your spirit so vexed that you eat no food? He said, because I spoke to Naboth the Jezreelite and said to him, give me your vineyard for money, or else if it please you, I'll give you another vineyard for it. And he answered, I will not give you my vineyard. Poor baby. Jezebel's wife said, do you now govern Israel? Arise and eat bread. Let your heart be cheerful. I will give you the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. She has him killed. She has false witnesses brought against him saying that he did a capital crime and he's stoned to death. They take the land. She says, go take it. He's dead. And he takes it. Ahab and Jezebel are going to pay for that later. Gehazi, 2 Kings 5. You remember the story of Naaman, the leper? Naaman, the leper, has come to Israel, and the prophet doesn't come out, just says, go dip in the River Jordan 7 times and you'll be cleansed of the leprosy. Well, that wasn't the way that Naaman thought it ought to go. He said, behold, I thought he would come out and wave his arms over the place and call the name of his God, and that's how he'd do it. Instead, he tells me to go dip in the river, and he didn't even come out. And I know better rivers than the Jordan. And he left in a huff. And then his servant to him said, Master, he'd ask you to do some great thing. Wouldn't you have done it? So he goes back, and he dips in the River Jordan 7 times. His flesh is clean. There's a lesson there, by the way. A lot of people react that way about baptism. Well, I think it ought to be this way or that way. Why? If that's what God said to do, it's what God said to do. And arguments say, well, you're saying it's all in the power of the water. It's in the power in God. But when God says, I'll give you the power when you do what I say, you do what he said. Well, he does it. He's cleansed the leper. And then he wants to give all these gifts and this wealth to the prophet. The prophet says, no. And as he's leaving, what does Gehazi do? That was some good stuff. He's offering it. You can just see the wheels turning. He said, I'm not stealing. He offered it. And so he runs after him. He says, oh, my master changed his mind. They give him the wealth. He comes back. But the Lord sees. And the prophet saw. And guess what Gehazi got? He got the leprosy put on him. Foolish, foolish people. Luke chapter 12, our last example. Then we'll sum up with just a very few short points. Luke chapter 12. This is the parable about the rich fool, and it begins with a fellow that's rather foolish himself. Verse 13, one of the multitudes said to Jesus, and it just always strikes me, just such a poor mark of character on this individual, that when he had the opportunity to have a conversation with the Lord, this is what he thought was worth discussing. Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Jesus said, man, who made me a judge or divider over you? And he said to him, take heed, keep yourself from all covetousness. For a man's life does not consist in the abundance of the things that he possesses. I mentioned this Wednesday night, but for those of you that weren't here, we were talking about contentment in the teen study the other night, and there was a woman that was there whose husband is on the fire department, and he said, I'll go into these homes, wealthy, wealthy homes, just luxury, and the woman there is on all these psychotics and antidepressants and everything else, and it wondered why. Well, obviously, one of the reasons why is money doesn't bring happiness. So money, it may bring you a little bit of excitement for a bit, but it doesn't bring happiness. And a man's life doesn't consist of these things. So then Jesus told the parable. He spoke a parable saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. He reasoned with himself, saying, what shall I do? Because I have not wherewith to bestow my fruits. He said, this will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and then I will bestow all my grain and my goods, and I will say to my soul, soul, you have much goods laid up for many years. Take ease, eat, drink, and be merry. God said to him, you foolish one, this night that your soul is required of you, and the things which you have prepared, whose shall they be? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. Mark 7 says that adulteries, murders, and covetousness, it comes from the heart. When you have an ungrateful heart, when you're not grateful for what you have, when you're not content with what you have, when you don't have a love for other people, when there's a bitterness and a jealousy and a greed, it's because you've got a problem here in the heart. The solution, Romans 13:8, says this. Love people. If you love people, you're not going to want their stuff. You're not going to resent that, hey, they have something you don't have. You can be happy for them. One of the things over and over, working with my kids and with other people's kids in PE and such, because I've been doing homeschool PE for years and everything, is helping kids learn, if you're only happy when you win, you're stealing yourself of a lot of opportunity to enjoy life. I said, when the other team wins, and it's enjoy that for them. I still remember one game when Jacob threw the ball backwards over his head, and it went in for the winning shot. You know, he wasn't even looking. That was great. Now, I was on the losing team for that. But I really enjoyed that. I was happy for him that went in. You'll see kids, they just, and if they don't win, you know, it is a stupid game, you know, or something. You're not going to win all the time. And if you did win all the time, it'd be pretty boring. One of the things I do with kids when they're having that problem, I'll get a coin. I say, we're going to play a game where you get to always win. I'll take a nickel and we'll say, don't call heads or tails, call whether or not it's a nickel. They say, nickel. You won! Nickel. Wow, you're really good. Nickel. Wow. We'll have another group of kids going, yay. You know, it's like, they get bored pretty quick. And then we switch and we say, now it's called heads or tails. Heads. It's tails. Tails. Heads. 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 That feels better. If you win all the time, it's just not. Learn to enjoy other people's success. Learn to, and if it's competing in a game, enjoy it for the other team. Try, but if the other team wins, enjoy that they won. Next time, enjoy that you won. And when somebody has something, enjoy it for them. Love them. Romans chapter 13, verse 8. Owe no man anything except to love one another. He that loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law. For this, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not kill, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. If there's any other commandment, it's summed up in this word, love your neighbor as yourself. If you're glad for him because you love him, then you don't resent him. You're not jealous of him. Hebrews 13, verse 5. Be free from the love of money, content with such things as you have. For he himself said, I will no wise fail thee, neither will I in any wise forsake thee. Paul said, I know how to abound. He knew how to have plenty. I know how to be abased. He said, I've learned the secret to be content either way. In 1 Timothy 6, we came in with nothing, we came out with nothing. Having food and covering, be content. And just some practical ways of applying this. In your family priorities, as you choose what you're going to do, the way you structure your family and everything. You can structure your family as a way to make sure to get as much money coming in and as much goodies as possible. That's a foolish priority. Proverbs 15:17, better is a dinner of vegetables where love is than a lot more without the right things. At a yard sale, Proverbs 20, verse 14, says, oh, it's bad, says the buyer. Then he goes away and he boasts. You ever seen that? Contribution, 2 Corinthians 8. Paul said, talking about he told the Corinthians, lay by in store on the first day of the week as they're taking this contribution for needy saints in Jerusalem. And after, then in 2 Corinthians, he's collected the contribution from Corinth, from Macedonia, he says, even in their poverty they gave. He says, because first they gave themselves. You know, in what you gave to the Lord today for the Lord's work, how do you give? Does it show covetousness? Or does it show cheerful giving? And lastly, in budgeting. I'm not sure why that's so faint up there. It's the first time I look behind me. I don't know if it's been that way the whole time or not. But Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28 says, put off the old and put on the new. Him that used to steal, stop stealing, get a job and work so that you will have to give to him that has need. What do we do with our budgets? Do we take everything we make and it's just for ourselves, just for, oh, I got this bill and this bill, and just for ourselves, just for ourselves? Or do we make room for other people? You see what that text says? Work, take care of yourself, and work so that you'll have to give to him that has need. And there are some needy people out there that are could use some help. James Glenn is not as needy as he was a couple weeks ago, but I'm really glad for what he did, and really glad that he's been, what did Jesus say? Acts chapter 20, Paul mentions it. It is better to give than receive. Let's stand and sing the invitation song.